In the garden world, July is known as the bug month.
Oh.
So we all have to be right on our toes and spend maybe a little extra time in the garden because there will be attacks from different bugs. And the first thing we want to do when we see a bug in the garden is try to identify it. Is it a good bug or a bad bug? We don't want to treat all bugs the same. We really don't want to just say, I see some bugs on my plant, so I'm going to spray something on them, or I'm going to catch them and kill them. We may be destroying the beneficial bugs, which we need desperately. So make sure you identify before you make the next decision. And so you can do a little research. It's very easy to do anymore with computers, and make a good decision on whether to destroy it or not, or whether it's doing any harm or not. And I've also showed you and told you about the trick of the white piece of paper. Hold it under the plant, tap the plant vigorously. A lot of those bugs will fall onto that white piece of paper. Much easier to see than on the leaf. And then you can decide whether you need to take action or not. And again, because I like to repeat this, you know, if you see six little particles of dust or six bugs crawling around on that white piece of paper, that's nothing to be concerned about. But when you start seeing a dozen or more, then you may have to take some kind of action, unless you're also seeing some of the beneficial insects, like the well-known ladybug beetle. If she's there hanging out in your plants, then she's probably eating a lot of those bad bugs for you. And maybe you should just ignore the situation and let her take care of it for you rather than using some kind of insecticidal spray and killing her off too.
I wonder if there's a way to attract the good bugs and not the bad bugs.
There are ways. Certain plants will attract them. I always like to grow dill in my garden, dill and fennel, or any of those plants that have very, very small flowers. I didn't really bring any today.
That's all right. Yeah, you have every other
species
of plant life in here. But so you could attract, like you say, the ladybug beetle?
Yeah. And there's a lot of what we call parasitic wasp. They're little miniature wasp. They're going to be less than a quarter inch long. They're very, very small. They're so small that they can't even sting us.
Oh.
They try to, but they can't. Their stinger is just too small to penetrate our skin. Mm-hmm. Those are extremely, extremely beneficial. And so you should plant some of those plants with a really tiny... What are you laughing at, Igor?
Parasitic wasp.
Oh.
It does not sound like a friendly thing that I want around me.
Oh, okay. What a parasitic wasp does is it lays its eggs on the bad bugs. And, of course, those eggs develop inside and start feeding on that bad bug and kill it that way.
Okay.
So they can be extremely important. One of my favorite plants to attract the parasitic wasp. Now you got me laughing.
Well, because it's a horrible name. It's like, wow, this is something I want around?
Oh.
Yeah,
you do want them around.
It's bad for the bad bugs.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So one of my favorite plants to help attract those parasitic wasps, those very tiny wasps, is alyssum. Alyssum. That's a really neat garden plant. It's an annual, but it has very, very small flowers. And once it starts flowering, believe me, it will bring in those little parasitic wasps in a hurry. Because not only do they feed on the bad bugs, but they also, just like most bugs, need pollen and nectar. And they really don't want to go to a big flowering plant. They prefer the really small flowers that none of the other pollinators can take advantage of. So the full table is there for them.
Yes. Oh, that makes sense. That's a good analogy. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have the whole buffet to themselves.
They do. Yeah. And it's pretty neat to see, you know, sometimes when I was out at Pitt, I used to plant a lot of alyssum out there for that reason, because I wasn't going to spray any insecticides out there. There's too many people. And within days of planting those, some of them would just look abuzz with these parasitic wasps. Mm. And of course, then I'd have to try to educate everybody that these are friendly. They're not going to harm you. So sometimes it would be amazing. You could even stand back 20 feet and it would, you could see movement all over the top of these plants. That's the alyssum, real good one. But there's a lot of other real small flowering plants that will attract them, like the dill and the fennel. In my grandma's day, it was Queen Anne's lace. Of course, most of us don't like Queen Anne's lace anymore because it's kind of aggressive. Mm. We've learned a term. We want to say aggressive, not invasive anymore. There is a difference.
Oh, okay.
Invasive plant is one that really spreads quite quickly. An aggressive one spreads, but not real quickly, spreads to where you can control it. So that was a real common plant in my grandma's day. So what am I going to talk about here? Oh,
well, you got plenty of it.
Yeah. I kind of got off on a wild track there.
You know, you do that sometimes.
I do a lot. Yeah. Just ask my wife. It's just so many things go through my mind at once. Try to make it to the library because that's going to be interesting.
When is that program at the library?
11 o'clock today.
Okay.
Yep. Keith Atkins. Very, very knowledgeable and just a neat guy.
Are you going to be there too?
Yeah, I'm going to be there too.
Hey, there you go.
I'm going to be kind of his Vanna White.
Vanna White?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to try to help him out.
Boy, Vanna, you really let yourself go.
Yeah. So a couple, I want to talk about perennials today because it's that time of year. Now we can start dressing up our yard, not just dressing out, but helping out the bee population too and other pollinators, our yard with perennials now. And so I'm going to start with lavender. A real popular plant. Everybody loves the smell of lavender, and it will grow well here. Now, a couple little secrets to lavender, though, because it really doesn't like to be wet, and we get a lot of wet times here. So I highly, highly recommend it that you only plant it in well-drained soil and even plant it on a mound. Make a mound for each individual plant so that when it does rain, that rain can run off and keep the plant on the dry side. So that's very important. And you can keep lavender for several years, too. It's a real nice perennial. Mm-hmm. And you can collect the flowers, make your own potpourri. Another benefit of lavender is it's a highly scented plant. So it can deter rabbits and deer because they really just don't like the scent, or it can confuse them to the point where they can't find the plants they would like to eat at. So that's lavender.
I was going
to
say, I'll be your Vanna White.
Okay. And that's a sun-loving plant. The more sun, the better for it. Now, another one, and I'm gonna touch on shade plants too, but most of these perennials are going to be sun-loving perennials. This one is called Coreopsis, or tick seed. This one will bloom all season long. Here, I'll let you have the...
Well, nice. Looking at the card. Yeah, that's fine. Huh?
Yeah, remember the label in each plant. It's going to give you tons and tons of information of how tall it grows, when its flowering season is, whether it likes sunshade, all those things there. So Coreopsis, a great one. You're going to plant this. Oh, a perennial, by the way, is a plant that lives more than one season. Most of the perennials can live for decades even.
Wow.
Now, there are some that don't, that may only live for 3, 4, 5 years. But
what does the lavender usually last?
Oh, that you could probably get a couple decades out of
Holy moly.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say a couple years.
Oh, no, a couple decades.
Wow.
I've been lucky enough to visit one of the largest lavender farms in America. It's off the coast of Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah, on an island. Pretty neat place.
Does it smell good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could smell it miles and miles away. Wow. Yeah. And they make a lot of great products out of lavender.
So that's Coreopsis.
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 Is this other one.
Yep. So that's a real nice perennial to have in your garden. And one of the easy perennials to grow. Most of the time we can just pull that out of the pot, plant it in some good soil, water it in heavy, and keep it watered when it's really hot and dry. Otherwise, we can basically let it go. After it's gotten established after a year, most perennials don't need a lot of care then. We don't have to go out there and water every day and all that. As a matter of fact, it's beneficial not to.
And you can see all of these plants, by the way. We are on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB1075.
But, and you can check that out anytime. You don't have to run and check it out right now.
Right.
one of the more popular ones right now is called catmint.
Catmint. Okay.
Yeah. This is another highly scented plant and will bloom off and on all summer. When the blooms are all spent, if you just give the plant a haircut, it'll send a message to the plant that I got a bloom, because that's what their life is all about, is to grow and blossom and produce seed to carry on their DNA. So once it blossoms and the blossoms are all spent again, give it a haircut and it'll come up and blossom again. And also highly scented, so it's going to attract good pollinators and going to detract. Is that a word?
Yeah, detract? Of okay. course. Detract.
Those rabbits and groundhogs and deers and so on. It helps out with them. So I'll pull that one up close. Oh, well, not right now. Oh,
I just clicked in something else.
Yeah, that's a nice one. And like I said, a really nice sweet scent to it. Another one for people that want something taller in the perennial garden.
Yeah.
This is phlox. Most of us know about phlox. That's a real great pollinator. As a matter of fact,
phlox, like flock of seagulls or
flock. Yeah.
Flock.
Yeah. Phlox. And this one is called flame purple garden phlox. Has a long bloom season and likes to attract the butterflies or the butterfly moth because it has a long tubular flower. And so that nectar is way down and deep. Most bees can't get to it, so it's a great one to help attract the hummingbirds and the hummingbird moth. Now, for those people with shady areas, again, those were all sun-loving plants. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about sun and shade. This is a great, well, this one can grow sun or shade. It's pretty versatile in that fact.
This is pretty called, thick.
Yeah.
I like that.
Called a stilbe. It's a pretty plant even when it's not flowering.
A stilbe?
A stilbe, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or astilbe, however you want to pronounce it. So that's a great one. Here, let me
bring it up. They can see pretty good, yeah.
Can they? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite perennials. Can multiply fairly fast, too, so it makes it nice that way, too. Mm-hmm. And once it multiplies a little bit, you can dig and divide it and replant it other places, sun or shade. But it's most known for being a shade plant because there's not a lot of plants that flower in the shade. So I'll touch on that a little bit.
Okay.
Difference between sun and shade. If you see your shadow nice and clear, that's full sun. And if you don't see or barely can see your shadow, have a rough time finding it, that's probably a shady area. But that doesn't necessarily limit you. Like the astilbe, can grow in sun or shade. Hostas are a well-known shade plant, but they can grow in the sun. They're really better known, we call them a shade plant, but they tolerate the shade better than most plants. So they really can grow in the sun also. Make sure you plant them in soil that holds moisture. So add a little bit of peat moss or compost to that area and mulch it well. And that will help retain a lot of the moisture. And we can grow hostas anywhere we want. And speaking of hostas, and I think I've mentioned this before, a lot of people have a distaste for them because some of those blossoms can get 3 or 4 feet above the plant. And once they're spent, they kind of look terrible to some people. We can clip them right off right away. But there are a lot of hostas that don't send their blossoms way up high above the plant. Some keep their blossoms really short, just above the foliage. And so if you're really worried about those blossoms sticking up and looking ugly, then get the shorter blooming ones. And the hostas come in a lot of different foliage colors. So they're a neat plant, and they're extremely, extremely hardy. You can grow them anywhere. They love to grow and multiply no matter where you put them. I've even dug some hostas out when I was dividing and didn't know what to do and kind of threw them off into the backyard. And a few years later, I walked up there, and there they were growing there, too. So they're just a really, really...
You forgot all about them.
Yeah.
And there they go, happy as can be.
If you're just starting out in gardening, some of the perennials you should try is hostas and daylilies because they're very, very forgiving. They thrive on abuse or neglect.
We have to thank our sponsors at Worth W. Smith. We'll be right back in 30 seconds with more Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. With the weather heating up, stay comfortable with a room air conditioner at Worth Smith. They have plenty in stock. For your outdoor work, you'll find lots of wheelbarrows, all put together and ready to go. And a nice variety of new garden flags. A big selection of Carhartt clothing has finally arrived, along with spring boots for men and women. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And just like that, we return with more Master Gardener Bob Harris in the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. No phone calls yet today, but the phone lines are open.
Yep.
So give us a call if you have any questions at 814-368-9372. That's 368-9372.
Or you can even send some snail mail.
Yeah, the snail mail came in. Again, who was that? Before we were on Facebook Live, we read one from Illinois.
Yeah.
From, who was it?
Stephanie.
Yep, okay. Stephanie.
Really enjoyed that, Stephanie. Liked it a lot. So I've mentioned scents in plants. And another reason why I kind of picked all these plants, most of them are highly scented except for the Coreopsis and the Astilbe, because they can help deter not only the animals, but they also help deter mosquitoes and ticks and some of those bugs that bother us. So putting a few of those in our flower gardens or around our deck or patio or pool can be helpful. So keep that in mind. And I think I touched on it before, but I need to touch on it a little bit more because coming up July is bug month. Some ants may start to appear in the house along with other bugs. And a few hints on that, highly scented plants they really don't like. Anything citrus, they really dislike a lot. So one of the old tricks is people used to spray lemon pledge around their door frame or windows that they open. The ants and the mosquitoes really dislike that a lot, mostly ants I'm talking about. So that will keep them away from entering the house in that way. So lemon pledge is a real good scent to keep those bugs away, keep them outside. But also with ants, you know, and any other bug, you know, we probably are going to use some insecticide, whether it's a spray or those little box things that we set down where the ants have come to feed on it and kills them off. Sometimes, and not sometimes, but quite often, an ant can become immune to the poison that you're putting out in a hurry, even in one generation. So it's a good idea when you are putting out those little ant traps that you change up. Use one brand for a while, then switch over to another brand. So the ants don't have a chance to become immune to it.
Now, typically, how long would it take for an ant colony to be immune to something? Is it, are you talking like within a month they get over it, or a season?
You know, I don't know exact times, but I'm going to say in a season.
Okay.
In a season. They
so
can,
by the time the season's done, they can be immune to it.
Immune to it.
Wow.
So that next year you put that out. And
then
they
it
just,
doesn't bother them.
As a matter of fact, it becomes a food source for
them. You're feeding your problem.
So it's really important that you change up. And that's going to go even for insecticidal sprays, that if you have to use them. Any bug, not just the ants, any bug can mutate and become immune to that particular insecticide. So it is a good idea to try to mix it up a little bit.
And you said lemon pledge for, now does that work with all insects trying to get in your house?
Most insects, but we concentrate on the ants, especially this time of year, because we really don't want ants in our house. They can do a lot of destruction. Most ants can become carpenter ant-like, even if they're not a carpenter ant. They're looking for damp wood, and so just about all ants will feed on that. So they can become a problem that way. So we want to protect our house and keep those ants away any way possible. So when you're mowing the lawn, if you see an anthill, try to take care of that. I like to use the lemon pledge around doorways and windows that I open often. That keeps the ants from coming in that way. If you do see ants, try to track them. You know, I know it's kind of funny, but try to track them. Look at the I see one ant in the middle of the kitchen. But I see three or four ants near a certain area of the kitchen. We'll try to inspect that area closer. There may be some gap or hole there that's allowing them to come in. And that's a good place to maybe apply that the ant poison or the lemon pledge, especially with all of us. We have pets now. So don't just put the ant poison out there where the pets can get into it. Another thing I like to do is take a shoebox.
Oh, okay.
Shoebox and cut a little hole in it so the ants can enter in and the poison will be inside that shoebox. So the cats and dogs can't get into it or small children, but the ants can. Makes it a little safer that way.
Another pro tip from the Master Gardener. I love it. We have about 3 minutes left in the show.
Oh, okay. Have I talked about hydrogen peroxide before?
It's been a couple of weeks, but you mentioned it earlier in the season, but please go ahead.
So a lot of people, most people tend to overwater, and overwatering can cause a lot of diseases and funguses and bacteria in the soil that eventually can harm the plant, even kill the plant. So hydrogen peroxide is really liquid oxygen. And that's what the plant, you know, that bacteria is blocking off that oxygen or the fungus. Blocking off that oxygen supply to the plant through the roots, and so it can start to show harm. So a little watering with hydrogen peroxide, you just pour a little bit of hydrogen peroxide in your watering can, apply that to the plant, the base of the plant, and that will give that plant that boost of oxygen. And most often, it will maybe not kill off totally, but really help destroy that pathogen, we call it, whether it be bacteria or fungal. It will help kill off that that part of the plant. Matter of fact, even the one point where we start to see that powdery mildew on the leaves of the plant, we can mix a little hydrogen peroxide and water in a spray bottle and spray it right on the leaf, and that oxygen-rich environment kind of destroys that that pathogen there.
Now, can you overdo it with the
peroxide? Yeah, you could. Yeah, just like me and you, if we take in too much oxygen, you know, we put an oxygen mask on for too long, it'll start to harm us. So, yeah, you got to mix it with water.
Okay.
And you can look on the internet; they'll tell you what the amount is. But as an old gardener, I really don't do real strict measurements. Mm-hmm. In my watering can, which is a 2-gallon can, I'll give a glug, glug, glug that much hydrogen peroxide in there.
Real gardeners use the glug system.
Yes,
not,
yeah.
Not any kind of fancy measuring.
And in a little spray bottle, which may be half a quart, I'm just going to use like a capful, maybe two capfuls. That's all. That's all you need.
Okay.
And that will help the plant out a lot. As a matter of fact, rose growers have learned to use hydrogen peroxide as one of their tools. Constantly, they're spraying hydrogen peroxide on their roses because roses do attract a lot of pests, and it helps out the roses quite a bit.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Our show is out of time once again, but we'll be back next week with more of your questions. And that was fantastic to see a letter come in from,
yeah,
even from out of state.
Yeah.
They must watch on Facebook Live or Facebook.
They must, yeah.
Or listen on demand also at WESB.com. So you can do that. And with that, we will return next week right here on The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. 75 years of serving Bradford.
Yeah.
WESB.